Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to us, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. Thanks so much for your support. Support the program at support.greatdetectives.net. Now it's time for today's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Duke Red Matter, Part 5.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Dr. Gorey. You left word for me to call?
Yes. Wonder if I could see you sometime today, Doctor.
What about?
About the Abbott matter.
No. I'm kind of busy today. I talked to you once, Mr. Dollar. What else can I say to you?
That's up to you, Doctor. Entirely up to you. I can tell you this. I have reason not to believe what you said before.
Now, look here, young man.
I have reason to believe that Duke Red wasn't destroyed exactly the way it was reported.
I'm not going to listen to any tall tales about a horse.
And maybe you'll listen to one about a man.
What?
Thomas Warner, Duke Red's trainer, is missing. I've turned the matter over to the police.
Oh.
Yeah. How about it, Dr. Gorey? Do we talk?
All right, Mr. Dollar.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location San Pietro, California, to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Universal Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Duke Red matter. Expense account item 8, 90 cents, breakfast for me and coffee for Constable Tad Polk, San Pietro Police Department.
Yes, sir. I'm glad we could get together this morning, Mr. Dollar. You know, I thought a long time about you reporting Tom Warner missing.
Well, maybe I'm worried for nothing, but I do know I don't like the circumstances of his disappearance.
You using me, Mr. Dollar?
What?
You know I got a police force of 4 men. We can't conduct any sizable investigation into a disappearance. Just aren't equipped for it.
I thought it might be something like that.
I don't want to be spending civic money to satisfy some doubts in the mind of your organization. It's not my province, Mr. Dollar.
Look, the man's missing. Nobody knows where he is. He didn't leave a trace. He did leave a month's pay behind him. He left after an argument with Abbott. Nobody saw him leave that farm, Constable. No one knows where he is now.
Now, just hold on to your britches, boy. I didn't say I wouldn't do anything about it.
Huh?
I'm going out and have a talk with Ben Abbott, Mr. Dollar. I've known him for a long time. Think maybe I can find out something about this. We'll see what happens there first, then make some plans.
That sounds fair enough, Constable.
Where can I get in touch with you in case I have to?
I'm going over to see Dr. Gorey this morning. After that, I'll be at my hotel.
Fine. Dollar?
Yeah?
You think something might have happened to Tom Warner?
Yeah, Constable. I sure do. Expense account item 9, $2.50. One long-distance phone call to Hartford. I explained the matter of Tom Warner and requested Niles Pearson to have a man in Baltimore start checking with Warner's parents there in the event some lead as to his whereabouts might turn up there. After that, I drove out to see Dr. Gorey, veterinarian.
You know, you have a way of not being very nice on the telephone. What is it now, Mr. Dollar?
I just talked to my home office in Hartford, Dr. Gorey. They aren't very happy with the way this case has been going.
They're too bad about them in Hartford. How does it affect me?
Well, they're just about at the point where they might close it and call me back home.
All this fuss, and they're going to pay the claim?
No, not at all. I don't mean they're going to pay at all.
What?
They can do one of two things. They can appeal to the insurance commission for a judgment. They'd have a point. No reliable or cooperative witnesses saw the accident to the horse or the circumstances of it. What's more, there's no carcass. For all we know, the horse may be down in Mexico.
Now, look,
or
here.
They can institute proceedings against Abbott. Charge him with attempt to defraud.
That's ridiculous. Why would a man worth almost $1 million worry about an insurance policy?
Well, of course, it's ridiculous to you and me, Doctor. But then legally, it's not ridiculous at all. I can pretty well put some things together. Abbott didn't even want to file a claim for the loss of that horse. As a matter of fact, he fired his office manager, Monroe, for filing the claim. Fired him and paid him a bonus to get out and stay out so Monroe wouldn't have to answer any questions. True?
Possibly.
Abbott blamed the accident on Thomas Warner and fired him, too. Warner hasn't been seen or heard of since.
Now, you said on the phone...
I didn't say it, but I'll say it now. Abbott hated Warner because Warner was seeing his daughter. I'll also say Abbott never struck me as a man who could control his hates.
Tom Warner's nothing to me. I don't know anything about him.
But Ben Abbott is something to you. Now, look, Doctor. I spent some time checking you out because you're one of the parties who can help settle this thing. You've been at practice around here for a good long time. People seem to think a lot of you. I hate to see a nice guy like you get the book. I think I can stop that if you cooperate.
Now, look here.
Forget I'm an insurance investigator. I'm just a guy giving you some information. When I said my company's ready to turn the matter over to the insurance commission or file charges, it means that Abbott will have to sue for settlement. And that's just what we'd want him to do. In court, he'd have to produce Thomas Warner and prove his story of the accident. I don't think he can produce Thomas Warner. With what we have so far, Abbott would lose the suit and the insurance company wouldn't fool around then. There's no outfit tougher than an insurance company when somebody's trying to cheat them, whether it's inadvertent or not. You'd have to be in court too, Doctor.
Oh.
You see what I mean?
Yes.
Well, how about it? Can you give me the real story now?
I've been Ben Abbott's friend for 20 years.
And he asked you to lie for him. That's understandable to me. In a court, though, it's perjury.
What'll it do to him?
That's up to the company. I'll have to hear your part of it first.
Duke Red was dead when I got out there that night. Ben had shot him. Duke Red hadn't had any accident. Ben made me promise to tell you that he had. Ben had just shot him.
Shot him? But why?
Duke Red wasn't the horse Ben counted on or thought he was. He had good confirmation, but he just wouldn't run. Couldn't run, I think. Ben got mad about that and shot him.
And Tom Warner saw it happen, is that it?
Yeah. Ben told me Warner saw him shoot the horse. He gave Warner some money and told him to go away. I don't know. Ben's losing his mind, I think.
I've heard that about him before.
From who?
His daughter.
Terry, yeah. Poor Terry. Yes, she'd have reason to say that. Huh? Now what?
I'll have to talk to Abbott.
Sure.
One thing still worries me.
What's that?
I went over his bank record. He paid out money to Monroe, but he didn't pay out anything to Thomas Warner.
He told me that he did.
Okay, then. I'll ask him about that, too. Expense account item 10, 35 cents. I lost it in a payphone trying to get in touch with Ben Abbott. No one answered, so I drove on out to the farm. The short winter day was over when I got there. Darkness had already come over the fields. Darkness and loneliness. Hey! Hey in there, open up! Open up! Open up, somebody! Open up!
Mr. Dollar, sir. Good evening.
Hello, Cully. Didn't you hear me?
Mr. Dollar, sir, maybe this isn't such a good time to be coming around.
Is Mr. Abbott here?
Yes, sir, he is. But Constable Polk was out here this afternoon asking questions, and he got powerful mad. There's no telling what he might do. He's awful mad.
Well, I'm a little mad myself. I'd like to see him. Tell him I'm here.
Mr. Dollar, please.
That's all right, Cully. You go ahead.
All right, Miss Terry. I'll find Mr. Abbott, Mr. Dollar.
Hello, Johnny.
Hi.
Oh, don't. Don't come any closer.
Well, what is it? Why is it so dark in here?
I'd rather you didn't see me just now.
Huh? Terry.
Vanity. A woman always has that first, they say. Oh, John.
Who did this to you?
Dad. He's crazy. I just don't seem to do anything to please him.
Here now.
Oh, Johnny, I think it's the end.
Here now.
Take your hands off her.
What?
I said take your hands off her, or I'll kill you with this.
Johnny, be careful.
Wait a minute.
I'll show you. I'll show you. I killed the man. Terry, baby.
No, don't touch me. Oh, Johnny.
Oh, that's a pretty heavy cane he uses.
Oh, lie still. I'll phone a doctor.
No. Where'd he go?
I don't know. Out that way. Johnny, did you hear?
About killing someone else?
He was talking about Tom Warner. Johnny, I know it. He was talking about Tom.
I placed a call to Constable Polk's office, told him what happened. He said he'd start right away. After that, I took a look around the grounds. All the cars were still in the garages. Then I heard some sort of disturbance down by the stables.
Dollar! Don't come any closer. I've got a shotgun this time.
I have a gun too, Mr. Abbott.
Go away from here. Get in your car and go away from here.
The police will be here in a few minutes. Look, this won't do you any good. Abbott, did you hear me? It'll be better for you if you're in the house ready to make a statement for them when they come. I know that Dr. Corey lied for you, Abbott. I know that you killed that horse deliberately. Abbott!
I told you to get away from here!
You said you'd kill someone. You were talking about Tom Warner, weren't you? You killed him because of Terry.
Last warning. Go away.
I won't go away. But you'd better throw that gun away and come on out here.
I'm not afraid of you, the whole bunch of you.
You're just being foolish, Abbott. Like you were the day you smashed up a new car because some little thing on it didn't work. The way you killed that valuable horse because you didn't like his running. The way you killed Tom Warner without reason. You're smashing your whole life now this way. Put down that gun and come out. Abbott!
That's enough!
Abbott. Oh, you didn't have to do it this way, Abbott. Lie still.
Warner's body. Under this floor. All his things with it. You know about Duke Red.
I know. Don't try to talk.
Warner tried to stop me from killing him. He said I was crazy, Dollar.
Easy.
I'm not crazy, am I, Dollar?
Don't move.
Am I?
No. You're not crazy. Not anymore. They found the body of Thomas Warner where Abbott had said it was. He'd been shot to death. Terry was still in the hospital when I packed up and left San Pietro. Expense account item 11, $65.30. Hotel and board at the San Pietro Hotel. Item 12, $175. Airfare and incidentals back to Hartford. Item 13, $43 even, miscellaneous. Expense account total, $802.65. No remarks. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be another intriguing story for you beginning next Monday night.
Next week, the Flight 6 matter. A story involving a girl so beautiful that men were willing to kill for her. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Barbara Fuller, Barbara Eiler, Herb Butterfield, John Stevenson, Parley Bear, Will Wright, Robert Bruce, and Forrest Lewis. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, Roy Rowan speaking. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. This episode was originally adapted from the Johnny Dollar script, the Oklahoma Red Matter, which aired June 9th, 1953, but more developed. And you get more of a sense of tragedy in this case, and just a whole lot of things that Johnny Dollar stumbles into, you know, as he is investigating this case, that he didn't set out to find. Another solid performance by Bob Bailey. All right, well, now let's go ahead and we will continue on with High Sky Hoodoo.
Carter Brown, Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
Saturday morning at a few minutes to seven was fine and clear. Swathed inside the anti-G suit, sitting in the cockpit of the F-92K, I had only one idea in mind. To call a halt to the hoodoo on Whitney Kent and the plane at one and the same time. I waved a hand to the anxious group at the rail. Chuck, Hullmeyer, Moore, Jim Berg, and Sue. Then Gene Latimer's voice crackled over the radio in my eardrums.
Whitney, can you hear me? Are you getting me okay?
Sure, Gene. Loud and clear.
Okay. Take her up to 40,000 feet, then 20-degree turns. After that, you can go into the other tests.
Okay, Gene. Here we go. The takeoff was routine. I was used to the sloppy, clumsy feel of a jet at slow speeds. You have to throw the stick around like a barge pole before you get any results. Once you get them into their own element, into the stratosphere, then, brother, just breathe on that stick and you get a response.
How you doing, Whitney? Everything okay?
Smooth as silk, Gene. She lifted nice and cleanly. Altimeter's building up to 5,000.
No sign of trouble?
Not a speck. She's climbing like a bird. I leveled off at 30,000 with a match meter showing a steady 0.8. Nothing to get excited about. Somewhere around 370 to 380 miles per hour. I did the glides. Down to 5,000 feet, then back up to 30. After a routine of these, I did the turns. The F-92K turned nice and tightly with the aid of her flying tail. Our controls have kept the jet flyer's hair from turning pure white. All the while, I kept reporting back regularly to Gene, feeding him the information he wanted.
Okay, Whitney. I think you can take her back up to 40,000 and give her the gun.
We had permission to break the sound barrier at 40,000. Then the radio cut out. I wasn't worrying. Radios had cut out before. Everything else was still okay. The match meter registered 1. The speed of sound. It wasn't the first time I'd crashed the barrier, but it felt like the first time. It always did. But everything apart from that was fine. Then I looked up and saw that the nose of the plane was under the horizon. I eased back on the stick. The horizon stayed where it was. The plane's nose didn't lift. I fed in nose trim. But it didn't make an atom of difference. The nose stayed down. And then I remembered. The memory that had been drowned in an alcoholic haze came back, sharp and clear. The trouble was the flying tail. A jam-up locking the mechanism in the full nose-down position. But this time I was sober and I knew the answer. There's a manual control so you can cut the hydraulic pressure on the stabilizer in an emergency. I flicked the switch which cut the hydraulic pressure and then I grabbed for the manual control. And nothing happened. I tried it again and again. And still nothing happened. Looked like I'd be going through that ejection routine again. I pulled the blind down sharply over my face.
was the momentary blackout as the seat with me in it jerked free of the plane. Then I found myself in that exciting experience called free fall, because you can't get anybody to pay for it. Below me, I knew the F-92K would be spinning down, a silver streak to its doom. And in my heart was the grateful thought that this time I could be sure of my chute.
All right, gentlemen, let's take it quietly now. Whitney's back, all in one piece, for which we're all thankful. Now, maybe we can find out what the trouble was.
Sure we can. Because I know exactly.
You do? Well, what is it?
The flying tail got jammed in the nose-down position. Reasonable, Gene?
Sure. A slow leak in one of the valves would do it. But what about the manual control? What about the overriding switch to cut the hydraulics? Don't tell me you didn't think of those, Whitney.
I thought of them okay, Gene. There was only one thing wrong with them. They didn't work.
Didn't? But I tested them that last night around 10. They worked okay then. They must have worked today.
If you wanted to sabotage a plane, Gene, a leaking valve wouldn't be hard, would it?
No, it'd be darn easy.
How about the manual controls? Could you cut through something to make them ineffective? If you were going to sabotage it, Gene, you think that would be a good system?
A very good and very easy system.
But what about the other pilots, Whitney? Why didn't they get out like you?
Because they left it a fraction too late. I was the lucky guy. I quit early.
Well, I guess that gives us the answer. And I'm sure the Air Force will accept it. There's nothing wrong with the F-92K except sabotage.
And sabotage in this case includes murder. 5 Air Force pilots and Hank Jordan.
That means the FBI and the police will have to be brought in on it. Well, I won't be sorry. They're the experts. We can leave it to them.
But I wasn't satisfied to leave it to them. I had a couple of ideas of my own. The first meant getting hold of a gun. The other meant a trip to Los Angeles to the office of the Blue Circle Detective Agency. I borrowed the old man's Cadillac, and the afternoon was almost dead by the time I pulled up in L.A. outside the building. I was afraid in case I was too late, but I wasn't. The door of the outer office was open. The office itself was empty. But behind the frosted glass of the inner office door, I could see a figure. I moved in.
What?
Mr. Van Eck, I presume?
Yeah, yeah. Who are you?
Kent's the name. Whitney Kent of Kent Aircraft.
Oh.
What's all this, Mr. Van Eck? Suitcases?
Yeah, I'm packing.
Going far?
Well, I really haven't made up my mind. There are so many places.
And so many airfields, too. Los Alamos, Detroit, Barksdale.
You!
Naughty, naughty. Don't grab for your gun. Drop it like a good guy. Now.
No. Please. Please don't hit me.
I won't. I'll just see which is softer. Your head or this wall. And again.
Don't. I can't stand it.
How many of you were there? How many did it take to sabotage those Air Force planes?
Please, I don't...
How many?
Two.
You and who else? That guy Slade?
Yeah, only the two of us. Please don't hit me anymore. You feel so ashamed.
Of what?
Myself.
Who gave the orders? Come on. Would you like me to do some more head bouncing?
No, please.
Okay, who gave the orders?
It was...
Put him down, Buster.
Huh?
Fight somebody your own size.
Slade.
That's right. And this time, don't try those bullet head tactics. I can pull this trigger before you're off the floor.
He jumped me, Slade. I never had a chance.
Shut up, punk, and dry your eyes. You're grown up now. What are you, Kent? A scout? Waiting for the reserves to come up?
What are you talking about?
I told Stupid here we should have got going yesterday. But he figures there's plenty of time. He don't believe what he reads about the cops and the FBI sometimes being smart. So where are they?
There's no one around but me and your pal, Van Eck.
Have him! My turn, Slade!
I'd thrown the little guy at Slade. Two bullets hit Van Eck in the chest, but it gave me just enough time to pull my gun and send two slugs for Slade. I took a last look at the two bodies and left. When I got back to the beach house, I found I had a visitor. The old man.
Where the heck have you been, Whitney? I've been waiting here for a half hour.
Didn't you help yourself to a drink?
No. I've been sitting here trying to figure out who was behind the sabotage.
You, come up with any bright ideas?
No. All I ended up with was a feeling that a nervous breakdown is creeping up on me fast.
Well, I can stave it off. I found out who crocked up Air Force planes.
You did? Who?
The Blue Circle Detective Agency. Mrs. Bannock and Slade.
Son, that's great. I'll get the police on it right away.
That won't do any good. They're both dead.
What?
Which leaves me with my suspicions about who was giving them orders, but no proof.
Well, come on, who?
Who hired the Blue Circle in the first place?
Moore. Milton Moore.
Only we'd have trouble pinning it onto your new co-director, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
And it also leaves us without an explanation of the two crashes here. See if we can figure an answer to that while I'm gone.
Well, where are you going?
Just to put a little emotion of mine into operation.
Now, look here, Whitney. If you've got some crazy idea in your head of playing hero...
I'm no hero, Chuck. Just a jetman with old tubes blazing. My idea was great, I thought. I drove Chuck's Cadillac down to the plant. The guard on the gate recognized the car and waved me in. There was a light on in Jim Berg's office, and I parked outside. The security man would make a good partner in this operation, but in case he didn't approve of it entirely, I decided to twist the story a little.
Well, Whitney, kind of late for you to be around, isn't it?
Oh, I've been nosing around. Thought I'd have a chat with you.
Well, any time. You're number one boy in my books. You proved the F-92 case was sabotaged. Given us the first lead we've had.
We've done better than that.
Yeah? Tell me more. Our security chief's the last guy to hear anything that goes on.
I spent some time in L.A. The police were with me. They were playing along with an idea of mine.
Oh, what was that?
That Bannock and Slade of the Blue Circle Agency were behind the sabotaging of the five Air Force planes.
What? What happened?
Everything we wanted. The cops have got both of them in custody right now. Bannock cracked wide open, spilled the whole story, how they did it, who was paying them, everything.
Well, how do you like that? Hey, Whitney, have you got a gun?
Yeah.
So have I. This one.
And that's my boy, Jim. Let's go get the tough guy.
I've got a better idea.
What?
That you sit down in that chair and put both hands flat on the table. Otherwise, Whitney, I'll blow you to kingdom come.
Welcome back. Well, Whitney Kent is definitely in a spot, and I'm sure you're going to want to tune in next week to find out what happens to him. Well, we do turn now to listener comments and feedback. And Val said, just dropping another of my irregular reports from London to say hello and thank you once again for your wonderful podcast. First, I would say that the most recent Sherlock Holmes stories with the two acting knights, Sir Ralph and Sir John, came as a total revelation to me. I had no idea that these existed, and they were really terrific. What thrilled me is that the theme music that's used seems to be the same one still in use by the BBC in its most recent Holmes stories with Clive Merrison. They're currently on Radio 4 Extra, but not sure if you can listen to them from the States. We can listen to Radio 4 Extra in the States. BBC television a little harder, but the radio is something that they don't make any efforts to stop those in the United States from listening. We definitely appreciate it. And we have, she comments, the Carter Brown mysteries have been an expected pleasure. Too, although I did laugh out loud on the public transport when the hero suggested women photographers can't develop photographs. That's, you know, an interesting comment, and in some ways it does apply to today's program. Because as I've been listening to Carter Brown, I've observed that they try and make these, in some ways, like the American programs, only more so. And so we saw probably in this episode quite a bit more violence than we typically see one of our American radio detective heroes take. And also, there's also the stereotypical picture of the private eye attitude towards women, and that kind of say, female photographers can't develop film. That's kind of taking it to extreme. She does go on from here, though, to write, but of course, I have to now sing the praises of my first great detective love, Johnny Dollar. These five-episode mysteries are simply terrific. I like to save them up and treat myself in one splurge. I love the bromance and the Todd mystery. That scene where they're in the bar after the death of Gloria, when the jaunty music is loud in the background and they are talking deep, just great. The kind of scene that wouldn't fit into a shorter story. It's definitely one of those character development things that they really took to full advantage. And he says, finally, for many months, I meant to write about the new BBC episodes of Father Brown, which another of your correspondents mentioned to you. I know they mentioned the episodes were updated. They were indeed, but were set in post-war Britain. I really enjoyed them. They were sort of charmingly retro. That's all for now. Send Johnny my phone number. Tell him I'm waiting to hear from him. Will do, Val. Father Brown, I'm definitely interested to see the series. I've heard some good things about it from our UK listeners, but it's not yet, the series has not yet made its way to the United States with a DVD release or some video availability. It might be on BBC America, but don't have that channel or any other cable channel. So I'll eagerly wait till it gets here legitimately. Or if the DVD release is too expensive, I may need to fly to the UK to see it. But that may be a bigger budget item for later. And we are just kidding about that, folks. All right, well, we'll be back tomorrow with the lineup. Next Thursday, we begin Nick Carter. And join us back here on Monday for a new Johnny Dollar serial. And next Friday, we're going to wrap up High Sky Hoodoo. In the meanwhile, your comments are appreciated. Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.